This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
So I want the Celtics to cover. I want the Celtics halftime. I want Garnett points and rebounds.
Well, I'll tell you what I know. That's the dumbest f***ing bet I ever heard of.
I disagree.
You're taking my money all over town, placing bets.
I'm having very serious second thoughts.
Are you serious right now?
Howard, where's the money right now?
Howard, got my money?
Howard!
Is it too late?
I'm done. That means nothing. It meant nothing. Please. Give me another shot.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. And today we are reviewing a movie, as we tend to do on Wednesdays. And we're talking about Uncut Gems, which is direct. Okay, let's just run through this, right? It's a crime thriller. It was directed by Josh and Benny Safdie. And it stars, I think, as you can hear there, a slightly different Adam Sandler to the ones that we, to the roles that we've seen him in the past.
I think slightly is massive.
Yeah. There's still a lot of chatter.
No, that's true. It's like the crazy, like, horror house mirror version of Adam Sandler, where he's very familiar, but also in a way that's really not that funny at all.
I read this quote that said that Uncut Gems is a movie starring Adam Sandler. It's not an Adam Sandler movie. So, you know, I think that is like the perfect way to describe it. It's unlike anything you've seen from Adam Sandler, even if you have seen some of his more serious work, because he just dials it to 11 in a good way, not in an Adam Sandler dial it to 11 way, but in like, I can really act and I've had this in me for a long, long time. And now I get a chance to show it, and I show everybody like what I can do as like an actor.
I almost wondered whether it was the opposite, that the people who cast him or the directors knew that this is what they could do with and Adam Sandler dialed up to 11. And there are like so much opportunity to place him in not a Happy Gilmore context, but in a context where this could be something quite amazing.
Well, I think the role that came to mind for me with this film was Punch Drunk Love, right? Which was in 2002. So it seems like he's on a 20-year cycle or so of these sorts of very, very intense. Like you said, he's done serious performances elsewhere, but there is an intensity to Uncut Gems and to his Howard Ratner that I think is kind of unmatched in the Adam Sandler filmography is what I mean. And so it tells the story, we should say, it tells the story of a gem dealer, Howard Ratner.
New York, very Jewish, important to say, very important part
it
of
it. It is
the,
important to say, yeah. It's a huge part of the thing, yeah.
Yeah, who both, I think, works above and below the line of legality.
Yes.
Mostly below.
And who is a gambling addict. I think that is a gambling addict, not great with money, doesn't have the best family life, doesn't seem to be, you know, he and his wife are on the verge of splitting up.
Yep. He's got a mistress that he's installed in this like cheesy apartment in the city.
Yes.
And he gets his hand on a really, really rare and expensive gem.
Black opal.
Yeah, a black opal. And most of the film is essentially about how this opal kind of repeatedly leaves his hands and comes back into his hands, and he hopes to sell it for a lot of money, but there are lots of other people who also want it. And that's pretty much where.
I think it's also important to say that he is somewhat good at gambling. It's just that he cannot stop gambling. So the money never sticks with him. But he's not a bad gambler. He's not bad at taking chances. It's just that every chance he takes sort of leads him deeper into this rabbit hole of like complete madness.
Yeah, so essentially takes from one pot and puts it into the other.
Yeah.
It's so constant that he never actually has the money to pay off people that he owes or you know, gangsters who are after him and so on and so forth.
So it is exactly, I think, the fact that you might say he's not that bad at anything he does that misleads you into thinking and misleads him, rather, I think, into thinking that anything is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Because that's sort of the predominant driver in the movie, right? Like you said, money is moving from pot to pot. Gems are moving from pot to pot. Yeah. Fake Rolexes are moving around. And through it all, you just want to tell him, sell your house. You know what? You have two houses. Mm-hmm. You can sell one house. Yeah. You don't have to do any of the things that you're doing. And you realize that you're watching somebody who is in the grips of an addiction that he just can't control, right? It is the fact that he at some points seems to get things slightly under control that leads him to spiral further and further, because basically, anytime it feels like a solution presents itself, mm-hmm. he makes the wrong choice. That's sort of the Howard way. It's like, if I taking one step in this direction could solve my problem, mm-hmm. but taking 10 steps in a really convoluted direction might win me $1 million, I'm going to take the 10 steps.
And that's why the movie is so stressful, because every time there's a means to an end and you go like, phew, okay, it's over, it's done.
Yeah.
It just moves the story forward in worse ways. It continues to escalate for us, I guess, and sort of spiral down for him mm-hmm. throughout the movie. And it gets, you know, the anxiety builds up, the stress builds up, you're at the edge of your seat. I saw this comment on YouTube below the movie's trailer that summed it up, saying that it's like having stress as a breakfast cereal, but without the milk. And I think that was like, it's like, it's exactly that. It's so rough and raw, and it looks so grimy and dirty and noisy. Like, I think a lot of us agree that the movie is so noisy.
I felt like there were people screaming in my head throughout. And yes, most of the time Sandler was screaming on screen. And in a good way. I don't mean that in a negative way at all. Like, that really works for this character. But yeah, there's incessant pressure in this movie that translates in many ways, from the movement on screen to the sound and their choice of even how they dress him. Mm-hmm. Like, it's relentless. It's an assault on many of your senses. And I think eventually where the film ends is probably the only moment of respite that we get, and it's not what we were looking for, which is you know, kind of sad and difficult, and but kind of great as well.
So I really had to remind myself to breathe, because halfway through the film I started to realize that I don't think I was breathing very much, and that's because it's so tense. But I do want to say that I think we are sounding potentially a little bit like we did not like the film, because we're using really negative words to describe it. And that's because it's a tough watch. I really liked it.
Oh, I really liked it. I wished I'd known about it earlier. And again, we can come back to this later. I almost wished I watched it on a large screen as well, because I watched it at home on my TV. I think this kind of film would have been even more difficult on a really big screen. But
difficult in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. Again, it's not that I didn't like the movie, but it's not an easy movie to experience.
So the first time, you know, the opening 20 minutes of the movie, the way it moves, the sort of kinetic energy that it has, you know, everything is constantly moving without pause, without break. And then there's music at a certain volume, and then there is dialogue at a certain volume, and there's dialogue from like 12 different people at that same volume. Mm-hmm. There was a point when I went, is there something wrong with my TV, or is the stream wrong? Did they up, you know, like, is the streaming service like showing it the wrong way? What's going on? Until there was a slight pause and then everything died down. And I'm like, oh, okay, so that's what the movie is going for. But same, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I think if we saw this in 2019 when it did come out in the States, it would have been like easily one of my favorite movies of that year.
Yes, I agree with all of this. I also kind of don't know when the next time is that I will watch this movie again.
Same.
It's an odd feeling, right? I think it's one of those, it belongs in the same household as like a Darren Aronofsky film, where you might enjoy it, you might appreciate it, but you don't always feel like you want to be put through the ringer, you know? And this movie, as much as Howard's character, you know, continuously goes from bad situation to bad situation, continues to go from threat to threat, physical assault to emotional assault to verbal assault. Mm-hmm. You know, as he moves through these spaces, you move with him. And you, It has that, you know, you want to shout at the screen quality, I think.
At him.
Him specifically.
I literally shouted, "What are you doing, Howard?" like at least four times. So, yeah.
So let us know if you did the same thing. let us know if you've seen Uncut Gems. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. We're going to be back to continue discussing the movie and Adam Sandler and I guess, you know, the perennial question of big screen versus
small screen,
much, much smaller screen. Keep it here on Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
Where do these guys get precious black opals? That's what that is. And I've managed to track these guys down. I buy one from them.
Holy
that is, what is that? That's right here. That's the rock.
Why has it got so many colors in it, man? What is this?
That's the thing. They say you can see the whole universe in opals. That's how f***ing old they are.
Holy shit.
I've been telling you. That's why I'm wanting you to see it.
Yo, that's crazy, man. Yeah.
From stone to stone. Garnet to stone. You know that.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture. I am Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me, of course, as always, Sharmila Ganesan, Arvind Yuvaraj, and we're talking about Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems, mm-hmm. I think, in many ways, because the performance is so central to everything that goes on. I think you just heard a little bit of that level of noise that we were talking about earlier, how people just kind of talk all over each other. And that's without Lakeith Stanfield standing in the back, sort of mumbling through things
throughout
as well.
The movie, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is
or
that.
Some guy coming in and yelling about how his shirt got ripped and a dog getting stuck in the background. It's just, there's a lot going on in this film. And I think that's partly, so as I was watching it, I was trying to remember how, when the last time was that I watched a movie that felt so, it's a New York that doesn't feel like today's New York that you see on screen anymore. The movie is set in the early 2000s. But I think the story itself feels like it's much older.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a Martin Scorsese maybe 10, 15 years ago, you know, or 20 years ago even. There's an energy to the way people move on screen. There's an energy to the cinematography.
There's a lot of accents.
Yeah, there's a lot of accents, especially, and again, that Jewishness that I mentioned earlier. Mm. Something that's, I think, maybe slightly fallen out of fashion to portray on screen now, that family and how important that becomes in these communities.
So I can't remember when the last movie was that I watched that was set in the Diamond District.
Mm-hmm.
Because Howard is a, like we said, nebulous jeweler, gem dealer, something or other, it is set in a world where everybody is like that. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, right? Like as he goes from shop to shop, everybody knows him. Everybody's used to him trying to pawn off stolen / almost practically stolen jewelry.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of this color comes from. That's where a lot of these accents and these behaviors mm-hmm. and these sort of, hey, hi, kind of exchanges come from. And that energy is really... it's really lovely to watch. It's also interesting because the movie is grimy in that particular way that you were talking about earlier, Arvind, because like inside these pawn shops, not necessarily the prettiest setting, but the way it's shot makes it look claustrophobic and intense and interesting. And just I think that credit should go to the cinematographer.
Yeah, I think it also helps with that whole vibe with the looking grimy and the noise. I think it helps when you have people who are not necessarily good at acting or not actors. The Safdie brothers always do this. They take people who are not used to acting, who are just not actors, and plonk them into these movies. And then you get performances that are like slightly flat or slightly awkward, but in a good way. They know how to channel that weirdness or that, I don't know what it is. It's that slightly off key performance mm-hmm. that a lot of people in this movie give. One of them is Kevin Garnett. So he is the actual basketball player from, the retired NBA player,
mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people didn't know because his performance in this movie is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like
KG!
He comes off as someone who's been in the business for a long, long time. But he's not. they literally took him because he was a retired star. It was supposed to have Kobe Bryant, and then he didn't want to act in movies. He wanted to direct. Mm. Then they moved on to someone else, and then the season started. They couldn't get him, so they looked for people who were retired, and they went with Kevin. They also took footage from actual games and then changed it to serve the movie, to serve the plot. So the movie itself had 160 different scripts or redrafts because they had to keep changing it to serve different people who are in this movie. Real characters in the real world, fictionized for the Safdie brothers.
Mm, I think other than Kevin Garnett, who honestly only at the end of the film I realized was really himself, you have people like The Weeknd who pop up, playing a fictionalized version of themselves as well. I've not watched anything else by the Safdie brothers, Josh and Benny Safdie.
Josh and Benny, yeah.
Yeah, so I kept thinking, for me, the vibe of this movie was Martin Scorsese or John Cassavetes. And then I realized that Scorsese actually produced the film. So I can kind of see that connection. But you guys both mentioned cinematography. And Darius Conji, he's the cinematographer. Mm-hmm. And I think it plays a huge part in telling this story. Because it really does kind of move with Howard in a way that lets you... You've got to kind of like Howard to want to see this through with him.
Or empathize with him, at least.
Yeah, and he's not actually a very likable character. No. But somehow the way you move with him in this makes you feel like you are almost him.
Yeah, he's not likable, but he is very sympathetic, I think is the word, because he is kind of pathetic. That's a fundamental quality in him. There's an exchange that he has with his estranged wife where she basically laughs in his face, when he's attempting to kind of have a romantic, intimate, reconciliatory moment with her. She instead just goes, I can't look at you. Your face is the most annoying thing I've seen, more or less. Mm-hmm. And it is exactly that quality. And the quality that, by the way, Adam Sandler has built up over the course of his career that allows him to have that punch on screen. And I guess that brings us to this question, not just of Adam Sandler and his whether he's going to do something like this again, because like we said, he seems to do this every so often. Yep, he suddenly surprise everyone with this like incredibly intense role. But also, he's going to continue making movies with Netflix. I mean, what was the last one that he made? Why can't I remember the name?
Murder Mystery. Murder Mystery.
And if you look at the pivot from Murder Mystery to something like Uncut Gems, it's just immense. And I think that also speaks to Netflix's ability and budget to allow people to explore things like this.
Mm. I wonder whether having this multi-movie deal, meaning you already have it set, it kind of reminds me of the studio system of yore, right? Where they would sign on one star for like 10 movies. And because he was already contracted to them to deliver these 10 movies, they could actually play around with what they cast them in. So you could get the same actor doing a period piece. You could get him to do a cowboy movie. You could get him to do a romance. You could get him to do a thriller. I almost feel like that might be what they might be trying to do with Adam Sandler, because it's interesting why him and why would he be drawn to signing? I mean, money is one thing, but I would assume that the kind of movies you make also makes a difference.
So you mean like for Uncut Gems, right?
So I feel like I wonder whether Uncut Gems kind of heralds that, because there are more movies that he's going to be making with them.
Yeah.
I wonder whether it means that we'll be seeing him kind of dabble in genres that perhaps a larger screen wouldn't allow him.
So I think Adam Sandler has done this thing in the last 10 odd years where he has been in maybe four comedy movies that make a lot of money, and then he'll do one of those dramas that don't make a lot of money. So it's like four for you, one for me sort of a deal. The Safdies, though, they've done this with Robert Pattinson, where he was the Twilight guy, quote unquote, and they took him and went, okay, we can channel this into something more meaningful. They approached Adam Sandler 10 years ago for this movie, and his agents turned it down because they went, no, Adam Sandler has an image and he won't be doing this movie anytime soon. So once they saw that his career is sort of, I won't say dwindling, but his cinematic presence is sort of, on the low, they approached him again. He read the script and they went, okay, why not you approach something like this? Maybe for award season, maybe that's why it came out in December. So I don't know. Personally, I would like to see Sandler do more. I doubt he will, though.
So, because if you look at what he's made with/for Netflix and what he's made independently. Like you said, the difference is vast. I think anybody who has seen Murder Mystery will know that that could also be the guy from 51st Dates playing the exact same character. You can just pluck him out of any movie, put him in, and it's the same person. This, on the other hand, is not that. You know, Howard is not a recognizable creature in the landscape of Adam Sandler's past characters. So you're right. I'm not sure how many more he's going to do, especially since he campaigned pretty hard for the Oscars to the point where when the nominations came out and he wasn't nominated, he was like, all right, the Sandman doesn't have to wear suits anymore. And then congratulated his friends and Kathy Bates. You know, so I think that it's one of those... it depends on what you consider validation. But if he feels, you know, potentially that, yeah, I did this and it was creatively satisfying, but Hollywood just wants me to continue being Happy Gilmore, eh.
Yeah. Can we, you know, can I quickly say that if, you know, this is how you do MacGuffins, right?
Oh, yes. Uncut
Gems. Yeah. The Black Opal that we were talking about is the MacGuffin of this movie.
Yes.
But it is done in a way that goes back to why MacGuffins were made in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because every single scene with the Black Opal sort of advances the movie forward. It's not used as a prop. It's not used as a platform for somebody else to advance their own individual plot. It's always the center of the story. And it's why you need these plot pieces in the first place. And I think if anyone wants to, you know how to write MacGuffins, watch Uncut Gems, because that's how it's done.
If you can hear your way through to find the MacGuffin,
just remember to breathe.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I think that's a very crucial tip in watching Uncut Gems, which we all really liked. I mean, have you watched it? Do you think that Adam Sandler was robbed of a nomination? Tell us. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my. As always, if you want updates, if you'd like to drop us a message or chat, you can do that on social media. We are on both Twitter and Instagram at BFM Popcorn. We'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.